This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
You know, like, I know that that's odd for me, but you'll always find it at a Grand Prix that you'll see some people in the X5 bracket playing. Like, they exist. And when you're judging, it's always the worst because it's like, those are the people who are going to time.
Every single man.
Yeah, it's just like, can't we just, like, start without them? Like, we'll just put whatever you want in the system. We'll let them go. We'll just get the next round going.
Yeah, really.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI Court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play idiot. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mindflayer.
Scotty.
And I cashed that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some Modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some Modern. And it's like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play Modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hello, and welcome to the 240 of the A-Team Podcast. We're podcasting about magical things. And I'm joined by Scott McCallum, my best bud. Hello?
Hey, buddy.
And that's enough of you. We are also joined by Scumbag Schofield.
Hello. Do I get to talk now?
No. And we're joined by KYT, but KYT, he's just decided not to talk.
We will be joined by KYT?
Yeah, in theory.
Right. We can just pretend like he's here and he's nobody will know any difference.
Yeah, he's coming
up. Hi, guys.
Strong pro tour performance. yeah. So, how is everybody's week in Magic? Magic, the weekening.
It's a long weekening. It's a long, long weekendening.
Weekendending.
As it were, here in the Great White North, Canada.
Yeah. Media.
There was a whole bunch of stuff. It was Pro Tour weekend, so there's, of course, all the exciting stuff that normally goes along with that. Gen Con also occurred this weekend.
Oh, man,
so.
Yeah, Gen Con was up.
It was like a double dose of all of these people doing amazing magical things and me not doing them.
Yeah, pretty good.
So Twitter's awesome for that when they can show all the amazing things that you're missing out on.
Yeah, just trying to like live vicariously through Magriani.
Yeah, Magrini, yeah.
Magrini.
Yeah. Well, we
sorry.
So we had the Pro Tour and that's obviously the big most important piece. There was a lot of exciting announcements that came out. There were some big changes, which we will discuss. Jay, I know you didn't watch it, so you probably missed all of it. So we're going
to
talk all those things, and we'll get your honest reactions to them, which is really exciting. There were some pretty good narratives that were created throughout the course of the event. We had a notable Canadian local player for me. Actually, Rich Hohen was 8-0.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, like, he is.
I just found all my Rich Hohen tokens.
Right? Like, that guy's been playing forever. And so finally just decided he was going to play Mono Red and just demolished. He was 8-0. He obviously is known for his limited prowess, right? So he demolished. He was 8-0 after day one, along with Kentaro Yamamoto, who is one of the strong players that have come out of Saito's shop, you know, the Haruyui MTG shop.
Yeah.
Probably butchered that, sorry. Got the name on, though.
Hey,
he was playing the traditional Abzan Megamorph list. He had some pretty neat sideboard stuff, which I can talk about a little bit later, because this is definitively, like, the deck that I was playing before the Pro Tour, and if he's still playing it in the Pro Tour, then it's obviously still fine, and I'm going to just keep playing it, which is awesome. But Mono Red was out in force. It was like everywhere. There were two or three teams which I think actually came up with, you know, slightly different builds of Mono Red and just demolished. And then, you know, the other side of it, there was this brand new deck that came out. And I mean, we've been talking about how powerful the archetype has been in Limited. You know, when we talk about Blue-Red Thopters, you know, or the Thopter Squad, you know, as it was called by Sam Pardee and company, the face-to-face game CFB version. But it was focused around, you know, Ensoul Artifact, which was, you know, as we all remember, super busted with, you know, cards like
Anything.
And yeah. The Darksteel Citadel, which came out last core set. So when you kind of tie it all together and you've got this pretty powerful deck, and the deck did extremely well. The blue red and Soul Artifact deck, running with scissors, as they were calling it on coverage, it actually ended up putting up the highest win percentage of all of the decks across all of the field. So that was pretty exciting, and you will no doubt see a whole pile of that nonsense at your FNM.
There were until Zendikar's out.
Was this a standard deck?
Yeah, yeah, so it was standard. It was wild. Like it's the breakout deck.
I didn't realize that Soul Artifact was standard. So I thought they were talking about Modern the whole time, and was like, oh yeah, I'm not watching.
No, there were fucking four of Ghostfire Blade, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how much
does this deck cost? Like $2,
basically.
Well, it's expensive now because Hangar Back is like $15.
Oh my god!
And I think it's a four of Hangar. Hangar Back Walker's a four of, right? So
yeah,
I mean that's definitely the most expensive piece of the deck. The rest of it is fairly inexpensive. And you're looking at like four of the new Artifact Lord, the 2/3 that makes other artifact creatures, you know, +1/+1, four Hangar Back Walkers. So this is Mike Sigrist's list, by the way, which was played by I think Mike Sigrist, Sam Pardee. And if, like Hain and LSV, like a whole pile of them were playing this.
Yeah, yes. Fireball was on this deck. There was a couple other teams that were on the deck.
Yeah, there were some different versions of it too. This one is basically almost exclusively blue, with the exception of like Shrapnel Blast and, in Sigrist's case, Collateral Damage. Yeah. But the other ones were a little bit different, and I'll come to that in a second. But like four Chief of the Foundry, four Hangerback Walker, four Ornithopter, four Phyrexian Revoker. I'm going to talk about this card in a second. And I'll talk about it now. So I was super impressed with this card. Phyrexian Revoker in current standard, I thought there's no way it's going to be even all that good.
You're
and
right.
Then I watched him play Phyrexian Revoker against Devotion, and it completely demolished the deck. Because, you know, you saw it in Sigrist's semifinals, or quarters. Semifinals. Quarters, he was against Kentaro Yamamoto. And he ended up facing against Devotion. His opponent goes Forest, Elvish Mystic. And we're like, okay. And then so he untaps, or he plays a land, then says go. And then his opponent goes tap a land, play another Elvish Mystic. And so basically, Sigrist untaps, plays another land, casts Phyrexian Revoker, says Elvish Mystic, and Stone Rains him twice.
Yeah.
It was fucking gross. It was just really gross to watch. And I mean, there's so many different little things too. Like it turns Jace off. It's like new Jace. Turns new Chandra off. Turns off all of the planeswalkers.
Shuts down Elspeth, which is like kind of what these guys are playing to. It's like if I get the Elspeth, I might be able to choke up the board. No, you don't get to do that.
Just no. So and I mean, and it's a 2/1 for 2, which is sweet and plays well with multiple Chiefs of the Foundry. So like it was just really good. And then his four of at sort of the top end of the deck was he opted for Whirler Rogue.
Yeah, right? That guy was nutty.
Now
that card like I cut from Limited deck.
So
that's wrong.
See, it's interesting on a couple fronts here. Like the other decks, instead of playing like four copies of Whirler Rogue, they actually split Whirler Rogue with Kia Nalar and her husband, Kian Peel, right?
Yeah.
And so the CFB folks basically just said, well, we wanted to keep the mana as consistent as possible and leave the red as just a splash in the main. So they opted to just stay with four Whirler Rogues. And after watching it play out, I mean, Whirler Rogue was really good because they're playing like four copies of Ghostfire Blade and three copies of Springleaf Drum. You know, like these are all artifacts which are easily tapped to satisfy the Whirler Rogue, making guys unblockable, you know? And it's a great way to get through if you had to ensoul up a ground pounder, like you couldn't land it on a flyer. It's a really great way to kind of get that through and guarantee you're heading for five. But I think that you know, the real attraction to the deck is you get to play four copies of Shrapnel Blast for free. And Shrapnel Blast is a quarter of your life points. If any of you have ever played with Tribal Flames in Modern, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. But like, Shrapnel Blast is crazy quantities of damage. And this deck, if you like land a turn one Ornithopter, turn two and Soul Artifact bash you for five, and in a deck with four Shrapnel Blasts, this is a lot of the games will last for long.
So then, like, Smash the Smithereens becomes a sideboard card now, right?
Yep. Yep. Brian Kipler's deck did really well. He was actually packing three main deck copies of Dromoka's Command, which is supremely good against Ensoul Artifact, and also, like, lets him fight off the guys that matter. And he was playing three copies of Unravel the Aether in his sideboard.
Wow.
So,
which is kind of like the big thing, because this deck kind of, everyone who's playing it seemed like they made day two. Like, it was just the deck 80, that was
88%. Yeah. 88% of the people playing this deck made day two.
Yeah, so just like absolutely crazy numbers, like kind of like a not very big in the metagame day one, but then day two, it's like, this is all that's left. It's mono red in this deck, and then the other decks that are just like hoping that they can avoid the two of them and just bang off of other decks
because they're still hanging in because their limited records are good. You know,
like, it's like Brad Nelson just like, I thought everyone was going to play Jace and they didn't. So our deck is terrible.
Yeah. But I mean, the top eight ended up being, so Matt Sperling made top eight with Abzan Control. He was playing the more controlly version. He did have three copies of the new Nissei in it. There were three different copies of Red Aggro. Pat Cox, Stephen Neal, and Joel Larson, all playing mono red aggro. And then there were two copies of the blue, red, and soul deck. One of them by Mike Sigrist, and then the other one by Stephen Berrios. Stephen Berrios' list was the one that had Key and Peele in it. And Paul Jackson from Australia played Green Red Devotion. And Kentaro Yamamoto, previously mentioned, was playing Abzan Megamorph. So, like, the Deathmist Raptors, Death Protectors, that sort of
right.
Stuff. But yeah, like, Yamamoto's list, he really just decided to turn into Abzan aggro post-board, which is really neat because he got to play, like, three copies of Anafenza the Foremost, which is really good against red decks. You know, because it, like, stonewalls them pretty quickly, and it, like, shuts out the rally deck altogether. You know, extra copies of, like, Wraths and Dromoka's Commands and things like that. But, like, two copies of Wingmate Rock, two copies of Herald of Torment as well, which I thought was really interesting, because that card has basically disappeared.
And, Herald of Torment, is that, like, the 3-3 flyer for three?
Yeah, with the Bestow and the Lose a Life clause.
Right.
Yeah. But, like, he was playing that because you just, like, suit up a fucking Courser or suit up a Raptor and, like, kill your opponent real fast.
Well, yeah, he was trying to make cards that could survive through his Languish.
Yeah.
So he just make things that could live through Languish, and yeah.
So it was pretty neat. Like, I liked a lot of what he did with the sideboard, and I think that, you know, a little bit more attention to potentially that mono-red matchup. Like, he was playing two copies of Nyx Fleece Ram, and I just don't think that card's that good. I just don't think it's good enough, really, is what I'm looking for. I want something that's a bit more high impact, but... But yeah, it was sweet. I enjoyed watching him play, and he played it really well. So he flooded out versus Sigrist in one of the games, which is great. And Sigrist, of course, as you know, was my last pick for our pool. So since he made it all the way to the finals, I was like...
Oh yeah, I guess you did pretty well, didn't you?
I was crossing my fingers and pounding the table, and I was like, please, please, please. And then he's playing against Joel Larson, Swedish Kibler, in the finals with his mono red deck. They actually end up going to a game five. And in game five, Mike Sigrist mulligans to three.
Oh, my God.
And clearly doesn't win that game.
Correct.
He made it exciting. But
yeah, he did. He actually put up a hell of a fight for a mulligan to three.
Damn right he did. Imagine what he had done with five cards. Jesus.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it was really exciting. I felt like there were some pretty good narratives that came out. And, you know... Obviously, the last Pro Tour of the year has a lot of impact on things like World Magic Cup champions and captains and Player of the Year. Hall of Fame announcement came out. Willie Edel made it in, which is exciting.
Woo, go Willie!
Shota Yasuoka made it in. And, of course, Eric Froelich, who everybody knew was going to make it. So
yeah, everybody knew Ifro would.
Yeah, but it was really good. Ifro, of course, was in the lead for Play of the Year. Did very well in the Pro Tour. Started 0-3 and then started to pull a Hain.
Yeah, it did like 9 out of 10.
Yeah, it went like 9-1 after that or something like that. Did very, very well. Unfortunately, it wasn't quite good enough to stop Mike Sigrist from making it to the finals. And of course, since Sigrist has been on such a tear, those points actually earned him the Player of the Year spot. So he passed Ifro in those points and earned himself not only the captaincy of the American team for the World Cup Championship, but also earned his spot in the World Championship.
And, you know, one thing needs to be said that, like, Ifro was actually on coverage on Sunday.
Got
and Sigrist did not have it locked up. Sigrist had to make it to the finals in order to kind of steal that job, steal that the spot from Ifro. And when it happened, like, they went, like, pretty much right to Ifro. Like, they didn't give him a chance, and he fucking handled it like a pro. Like, he handled it like a champ. Like,
You could clearly tell he was upset.
Yes, he was, but, like, he really, really kept his composure.
Agreed.
Really, really, like, he handled it. Like, I thought it was kind of rude. Like, it was kicking a guy while he was down in a sense of, like, oh, how do you feel about this? Well,
they did it to Jacob Wilson. I mean, they're going to do it again. Yeah.
It's kind of, like, becoming, like, this trend that they've got, like, this, like, sadistic director or something like that. It's just, like, why? Why do we have to go here? But, you know, I didn't get to watch as much as I liked. I still watched a lot. I thought the coverage did a really good job for this one. Like, I didn't see, like, the little production errors that had been plaguing the last ones. They really just kind of had things going. Like, they were making good cuts. They were having good dialogue. Like, it really was going well.
Yeah, I thought overall it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Like I said, I didn't see any major glaring issues. There were a couple late cuts, you know, where that left some of the guys kind of standing there smiling at the camera early on, but I think those got cleaned up pretty quickly. But yeah, man, like, I agree with you. Like, it was pretty good.
I can't say enough good things about Ian Duke also. Ian Duke has been, like, a fantastic addition, and he just keeps getting better, so...
Yep.
Like, they're doing some of the right things. They're learning, you know, the right lessons. They're not switching it up too much. We're not seeing new faces every time. They're really kind of sticking with the core group, and it's paying dividends.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. So aside from the top eight, there were, I think, four decks that ended up going 9-1.
Yeah.
What were they?
Rich Hohen and his mono red deck, as I mentioned. This is 9-1 in standard. Like, their limited records don't matter. Philip Arcuni played a teamer build, actually, and the only blue cards in the main deck were three copies of Stubborn Denial and four copies of Savage Knuckleblade. It seems like some of his choices are, you know, somewhat unconventional. There's like a Miser Arbor Colossus, and he kind of 3-1'd that one with a three Stormbreath Dragon, which I don't think I'd do, but three Boonsader in the main deck and one copy of Polukranos also seems a little bit strange, but really nice to see four copies of Crater's Claws and two copies of Anger of the Gods in the main deck. So, you know, Den Protectors, Feed the Clans, and more counter magic and stuff in the sideboard. But it was, so that one did pretty well. Rich Hohen, as I mentioned. And the one that Stephen Neal had a mono red deck as well, his had two copies of Chandra, Fire of Kaladesh in it. The standout for the red decks for sure is Abbot of Carol Keep, though. Like,
this, really?
Oh, God, yeah. No, it was, and watching it in play on coverage was like even more impressive because they're like jamming this on three. The number of times I saw them play an Abbot on turn four with three lands, they just like tap two, play an Abbot, and then they flip the land, play a land, you know, like they flip a land off Abbot, play the land, drop another two drop. Like it was gross.
Yeah, that's gross. Pretty good.
It happened a lot. So the fact that it has prowess also was pretty neat.
Oh yeah, it's what makes the card, I think, playable. Like the two mana pseudo draw card for 2/1 is good, but having that prowess just is kind of what pushes this card above and beyond because it can grow. It's a big threat. It does, you know, it has enough upside to kind of make it Swift Spear-ish.
Yeah, and you're playing it next to Swift Spear, and of course, Eidolon of the Great Rebel was a 4-pack in all of the red decks.
Right.
So that's something else that was evident. But Cedric wrote an article today on Premium. And he was kind of reviewing the Pro Tour and reviewing the Pro Tour decks. And the one thing that I think really was true for this Pro Tour was that Wild Slash was actually insane. Like, being able to play Shock and have access to Shock was just crazy good for this Pro Tour.
Yeah.
And then by extension, if Wild Slash was good, then Searing Blood was insane. So, you know, decks that were packing those looked pretty interesting. I mean, we're basically talking 19 creatures, 21 spells, and 20 mountains, man. It was like fucking 1994 Magic all over again.
Jeez.
Yeah. But the one deck that stood out, I mentioned it briefly earlier, was Brian Kibler played a green-white aggro deck and ended up going 9-1 in standard with it. And so far, from what we can tell in terms of testing, it actually has really good game against the field. So if you're interested in playing a deck that maybe a lot of people aren't playing, that's got a, you know, pretty good matchups across the board, then I would definitely look at Brian Kibler's green-white deck. He'll be writing about it later on Star City Games. And for sure, there's a blog post up on his blog, bmkgaming.com, where you can kind of get the list as well. But it's of course posted on the Wizard site. So, but yeah, it's been testing very well from what I understand. Larry and Jason have both been jamming it. They say it's the real deal. So that's interesting. And then the other deck that stood out, as I understand it, was, where are you? Scrolling.
Are you looking for the cool deck that didn't make it?
Yeah, the Jund deck.
There was the Jund deck. Yeah, the Jund deck was neat. Where the heck is that?
It was obviously not in the 24 to 27 points list.
No, it was in the second list.
Yeah, you're probably right. 21 to 23. Yeah, Jay, you're going to like this list. It's pretty sweet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Kyle Bogamus and a couple of his buddies played a green-white Enchantress deck.
Really?
With Starfield and Nyx. Yeah, and Sigil of the Empty Throne, like that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. There are like four main deck copies of Silk Grab. Wow. That's how far we've come.
Silk Grab, holy shit.
Yeah, man. Where are you? Damn it. There he is. Luke Mulcahy played this deck. And it was four Community of the Gods, four Gather the Pack. Gather the Pack is a new uncommon from Origins. It's a green and one for a sorcery. Reveal the top five cards of your library, put a creature from among them in your hand, and put the rest in your graveyard. Right? So similar to Commune, where Commune was creature or enchantment.
Yeah.
But it has spell mastery, and it says if there's two or more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, put two creature cards among them into your hand instead of one. So there's four Commune, four Gather the Pack, four Satyr Wayfinder. Like, very clearly, this is a graveyard deck, right? It's got four Tazzagar the Golden Fang and four Gurmag Angler. So it's like Delve City. Four copies of Reaper of the Wilds, which I thought was very interesting. But yeah. I mean, it's a resilient threat. It's a 4/5.
Yeah,
which
we great card.
And
great
he's
card.
Playing four copies of Languish instead.
Yeah, so this is the I'm going to Languish and not be punished for it. So
and
the
scry.
Only...
I'm going to Languish, Wrath your board, scry four times and not be punished.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Wayfinder replaces itself with a land and fills your graveyard. Tassiger is Tassiger. Gurmag is Gurmag. Reaper is Reaper. So, like, you have all these things that have five toughness. Herald of Torment, he's got one copy in there. Well, if he bestows it, life's good. Then he's got four Flamewake Phoenix.
Copies of Flamewake Phoenix. Now, this card is... So, having played with this card in a green-red aggressive shell, this card is actually insane. Like, this destroys control in like, every way, shape, or form. But the fact that you just mill this bastard off and then just, oh, I've got a Reaper, I've got an Angler, I've got a Tassiger, I've got a whatever, so I'll just, like, pay red mana and get all these things back. Because I keep flipping them over.
Yeah, and if you look at his mana base, you can tell that he is not intending to cast this Flamewake Phoenix with two red.
No.
Like, these are supposed to be going into his graveyard, and he's supposed to be bringing them back for a single red, because his dual lands are black-green dual lands, and then he's got fetches to grab the three mountains in his deck. So he grabs one mountain, and he's doing that. He's also running like a single copy of Colgan the Storm's Fury, and then Dragonlord Colgan. So he's got two Colgans, one of each, who are also five toughness creatures. So.
Yeah, nice trumps. Yeah. And I mean, if you're going with the semi-swarm strategy as well, of like dealing with Flamewake Phoenix and stuff, Storm's Fury is pretty good.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was really neat. It was a very interesting deck, one that stood out for sure as a unique approach to the meta. There's zero removal spells with the exception of the four copies of Languish of the deck.
Not even Murderous Cut thing.
No, man, not one. In the sideboard, you've got one copy of Fleshbag Marauder, four copies of Seismic Rupture, which is obviously coming in against like the swarm decks that are going real low. And then you've got two Crux of Fate if you want it. But, like, realistically, four copies of Bloodsoaked Champion in this deck. Like, what is this deck even doing?
The Bloodsoke champions would be great in like some sort of control matchup.
I guess, right?
Like just as a reoccurring threat that just won't go away.
I cut four Languish and bring in four Bloodsoke champion. Like,
yeah, why not?
Wow. But yeah, so that deck stood out as neat to me as well. But yeah, otherwise everyone was playing either Devotion or Mono Red or Blue Red Scissors and or some flavor of Abzan. Like that.
And
was
see,
it.
I'm excited to play Standard, but it's because I want to play the Demonic Pack decks that we saw.
So good old local, good old fan of the show, friend of the show, Daniel Fournier. Okay. Had an amazing deck tech.
Yeah, it was very entertaining.
With BDM. And if you haven't watched it, Jay, I suggest you actually go back and watch it. Like, it's on the coverage page in the YouTube links. Just, like, scroll through until you see Daniel Fournier with BDM. But, okay. Like, totally worth watching. He did such a good job. Yeah. Everybody in the chat was so positive about Fournier when he was doing the deck tech. And, yeah, the deck looked sweet. It looked like a lot of fun.
I just love, like, the joking around. Like, he was really, really natural with it. Like, he did a fantastic job.
Yeah, like he, does this for a living or something.
Yeah.
but it was really good. And I think he represented the store well. I think he represented the country well. And he represented himself very well. So I was really proud of him for that.
I actually like the other, the other Pro Tour champion, last Pro Tour champion. I like. Or not hit last one, but the one before. Yeah, I liked his demonic pack.
Yeah. So what was tell us, what was that sort of like little combo that he was putting together?
Okay, so he was playing just Black Brain with Demonic Pact. And he was running kind of to make his work, he was running the new 6-drop green guy that's a 6/5. That when you cast him you get to look for a 3-drop out of your deck and put it into play.
Yeah, Bellowing Tangle something.
Yeah, yeah, the Bellowing Tangle guy. And he was using it with like oh my goodness, is it called Nest Invader, the 3/3 that you have to return permanent to your hand?
Rebounding Crisis or something like that?
Yeah, Rebounding Crisis. Nest Invader's from, what's it called?
Rise.
Yeah, Rise, and it made
Yeah, you know, you're right. Yeah, but it's the 3/3 guy that you have to return a permanent you control to your hand when you cast. So, he would just have the pact out, the pact's doing its thing, and then he would cast the 6-drop, find it, return it. And then on top of that, he also had access to Reclamation Sage to kind of burn, kill it out that way. He was using
Invasive Species. Is the name.
Invasive Species, that's the card.
Returns the battlefield, return another permanent you control to its owner's hands. So 3/3 for 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also had, like, yeah, he had the Reclamation Sages. He was doing, like, the green guy that brings the Den Protector. He was kind of doing Den Protector type shenanigans and stuff like that. So he just had ways to kind of deal with it, but it takes 4 turns for that thing to kill you, and 4 turns is a very long time, especially when you're mind rotting a guy and then divinationing yourself and then getting like a wicked just like 4-point damage in on something. And the fact that like his deck can deal with it and put 9 power into play at the same time was very, very powerful.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There was a deck tech that was done on that as well, just like by text. Corbin did it.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, which is interesting. So you're looking at, there's Thoughtseize in there as well. So he's kind of got that to complement the Mind Rots. But his Bellower is able to get things like Nissa, you know, or yeah. Den Protector, Invasive Species, Reclamation Sage, Coursers. Like, it was pretty sweet. If he ever resolved this, he's definitely getting a guy of value. And it goes right into play, which is like fucking gross. So. Yeah, it's otherwise it looks like a pretty straight deck. Like 1 copy of Read the Bones, 2 Languish, 2 Price, 2 Bow Blight, 4 Downfall, you know, 1 copy of Ugin. Just get there.
Yeah, gotta have the Ugin.
So yeah, it looks sweet. Sideboard looked pretty tight. So yeah, there's some sweet play pictures. There's one picture that was taken by coverage team where there's like 3 packs on the table. It's freaking awesome. So but yeah, there are a lot of cool decks, but what I'd really like to find out is if there were any cool decks that weren't featured on coverage that may have been seen on the tables. KYT, why don't you tell us what you saw at the Pro Tour?
Oh my goodness, it's KYT! Because you know he's been here the whole time.
I've been here the whole fucking show. No. I just found myself. I'm still not home yet. I found myself this quiet little corner. My bus is in an over an hour, so I've got time to talk. I didn't face anything interesting in my matches. Maybe the first one I faced against Blue Black Thopter Control is what I called it, and I which people have probably explored, and I faced Blue Red Artifacts, which was the talk of the tournament. I also played against just decks that I think fell out of favor at some point. A green black aggro with Collected Company that just, you know, I was always scared when he cast them, but he was just turning over Warden of the First Tree and like a Den Protector. And I'm like, that's not nearly as crazy as like the Abzan Rally deck. So I was able to beat that guy. But outside of that, I didn't see anything that was really off the wall. Mostly things that haven't been played for a long time. Like my last round was against, you know, Jeskai Aggro that I personally haven't seen in a while, though it has seen played in the SCG circuit. And I faced Jeskai Heroic. Got killed by a top decked Teemer Battle Rage.
Yep.
So it was just like the whole weekend. I think I faced a particular deck once, maybe. Like I faced two blue black control, but one was the classic type, the other one was Thopter Control. So overall, even though there were like the metagame breakdown showed certain decks being the top 3%, they were small enough that it made it so that I basically faced a different deck. Like I probably faced 10 different decks without really thinking too hard about it. I probably did face like 10 and Abzan mid range. I thought it was just the Japanese guys who were adopting Tragic Arrogance in their deck, but one American I played against had that as well in their 75, and it was everywhere, everything in the format. And so my deck choice was Red Green Devotion. It's been that for a while. I think since I talked about on the show about my preparation 2 weeks ago, because I expected Red Green Devotion, Abzan, like some sort of Abzan control deck, and Mono Red to be the top three. And I think they were, at least day one or something. But they weren't, like, again, like I said, high enough that I was rewarded for that predicted meta, because I only played Red Green the Mirror once, and I only played Abzan control once. And everything else was just like everywhere. like I have to think exactly what unique deck other people are playing against me, because there were just too many for me to think of.
Wow.
But the pack deck, yes, it was interesting. The story was the one that Fournier played was designed by Lucas Xiao, and it was interesting just because he had been just playing a few modal games with it, decides to bring it on Thursday. He tested against Dan, tested a bit against me. Felt like it was good against Dan's Abzan. Felt it was good against my Red Green Devotion. He wasn't crushing me by any means. It was like he felt if it was 50-50, him being the Abzan master, he felt like heading into the tournament with Abzan and nothing new, where the rest of the field was gunning for you, he didn't want to do that. So he'd rather play the pack deck if it offered an element of surprise. So, and somehow he got Dan, like Lantier and Fournier and Pascal to play it. And Pascal only played it, switched to it very last minute. We're talking about at midnight. This
oh
is
my
how,
God.
Wow. This is why he doesn't do well at Pro Tours, guys, because at midnight he decides to build the deck on Modo outside of the hotel room. The four of us are already sleeping in bed. He's like, I'm going to play a few games in Modo. And if I do well with it, I'm going to play it. We wake up and he's like, yeah, I'm playing the pack deck. And he basically played like at 1-8 man to decide that. And Dan Lantier, there's two Dans here. Lantier thought that, well, if the Abzan doctor, Lucas, who won GP Toronto with it, was switching, like he felt like it was a mistake for him not to switch. If someone that he felt was an Abzan expert was not going to play Abzan, he decided to switch. And the deck was sweet, but it definitely struggles with a lot of things, especially not being able to kill it kills really fucking slowly.
Yeah.
With just like two Tassigers as its potential clock outside of multiple packs. So
even like an Ugin in the main, like one copy.
Yeah, in the main. So there are games where it looks like you're crushing the opponent. You have a flip Nissa, a flip Jace. Like this was against me, and like a pack or something, and I would just like have no cards in hand. But if I rip like an Atarka and a bunch of other spells, like I have Seethian Ridden, I have Hornet Queens myself, they were not able to, even with that overwhelming, like usually when you have multiple planeswalkers and an enchantment that's a pseudo planeswalker, you can't lose, but it just doesn't kill fast enough, and each of them are not super high impact enough. It just looks like you're way ahead, but you're actually marginally ahead. So moving forward, I'm not sure how that deck will do, especially with how aggressive blue-red artifacts and some of these mono-red matchups are for that deck. I see it, well, maybe a much more work will need to be done. And Mike Flores was very interested. He came up to my room on the Sunday just to goldfish with the deck and thinks there's some potential there, but he was going to do some major, he was gonna need to do some major changes to the deck. So
this is to the pack deck.
Yeah, to the pack deck. Yeah.
So how cool was it? Like, tell us about your experience this time, because it sounds like from everything that I've seen and everything that I was able to pick up from, you know, social media feeds from you and that sort of stuff, like you had a pretty good outing this time. Like, you much better than last time.
Yeah, I don't even remember if I finished 4-4 or 5-3 last time, day one. I think maybe I did roughly the same, except my day two was less of a train wreck. My day two, I basically, from Washington, I spiraled into non-contention very quickly. Whereas this, I was very much into it even after the draft. I think I was just dead in the water before the draft ended last time. And here I was in the first couple of games of Standard, still in it. And then the last, with three rounds to go, if I won out, I was going to requalify for the next Pro Tour. So yeah. I had like an eight man, a PTQ eight man, literally. and I couldn't close the deal, but I did a lot better. And I felt I drafted worse decks than I did previously, but managed to squeeze out like value out of them. Well, my first deck was complete garbage. It was a green black deck that somehow I willed five Undead Servants. Yeah. But I didn't wheel any of the other cards.
That good. I can't tell if that card's good in draft. I like never take it.
It's kind of slow in a super aggressive format.
But it's one of those things that the more of them you get, the better it can be.
Like, synergy to make them really good.
Yeah.
So you need like return centaurs where like you mill yourself four cards, or you need gather to the pack. It's probably super good with it. And basically I just had five of them that had no other cards that made them good. I didn't have, like, let's say if I had Satyr Wayfinder in this format, I didn't have that type of card. So I was just, like, casting them on turn four, like a 3-2 dumb guy. And then I needed the other deck to, like, to not be a flying deck, to actually need to trade with that guy so I can play another dumb guy and get an extra 2-2. So it felt like garbage, but I guess I was able to get enough aggressive draws to be able to finish that draft 2-1. Felt like my opponent's deck had some cards that just weren't that impactful. So I think it was both the aggression of my deck and the fact that their deck just didn't punish me enough. It was just like clunky, slow decks. I mean, if they're going to play Vastwood Gorger and big vanilla guys like that, then I had a chance to 2-1 that pod. So I was really happy to be able to 2-1. Showed my deck to everyone, and they basically said it was an 0-3 deck. So getting out of that was awesome. And but my second draft was also the same. It was like green-black again. And I kept ending up green-black because I would first pick like a white card. In draft two, I would pick Consul's Lieutenant or whatever, the double white first strike guy.
Yeah.
Like one of the best in commons. And then the white would just disappear instantly. There was no white. And it was the same both drafts. I just didn't see any white, so was forced to play like a green black deck that wasn't, you know, a great combo for this format, but squeaked out a win out of it. And overall ended up with the draft portion 3-3 and standard 6-4, which, I mean, I'm pretty happy that in both cases, the main thing I'm proud about is like in both Pro Tours, I ended up picking my own tweak list, like my own 75 for both constructive formats. And both times I was able to get at least 18 points and at least get featured in one of those deck list columns that they have. So that makes me proud that like I didn't just decide to go crazy and shit the bed. But both times I did pick like an established archetype and tweaked it based on how I think the metagame would be. So Seeing Written, I thought, was the trump card in the mirror. And I told, like, in the mirror match, my opponent felt helpless that I was just essentially drawing Atarka after Atarka, and he was just like sitting there like, fuck, he couldn't do anything. He knew he was gonna lose, but we just had to play it out the rest of the way. Red Green Devotion has historically been great against Abzan, and in my sideboard I had 4 Nylea's Disciple and 2 Seismic Ruptures for the mono red matchup, so I was very prepared for those. Obviously did not prepare for blue red artifacts that totally crushes me if they get a turn 2 in Soul Artifact, which my opponent did. But outside of that, if they don't get that super fast start, I don't think I'm that big of a dog as displayed by Paul Jackson's top 8 match against Berrios, where Berrios kept a hand in game 3 with like zero action, just mono Ornithopters and cards that did nothing.
Yeah.
So their deck's going to draw like that. So I don't hate that match that much, except it's probably unfavorable overall, just because if they do have Insole Artifact, it's like impossible to beat them. You gotta trade with Pelucranos on turn 4, or you gotta be lucky to accelerate into it. Abzan Rally is of course tough because we're not interacting with their graveyard, and Heroic with Aqueous Form, I just can't interact with that either. So that was an auto lose in the standard portion. So I didn't, like, I just lost to bad matchups. And I mean, if I could do it all over again, I wish I was testing blue red artifacts fast enough, like hard enough to actually.
Was that a deck that you guys were on? Do you know about it?
We knew about it, but I think we dismissed it as just like a gimmicky deck. We didn't devote enough time to consider it a serious choice, because it's existed for a while now. Just finally, like, these teams have figured out the key ingredients from Origins to make it, to take it over the top.
Yeah, and it's called fucking Siege Gank.
Yeah, and
in blue.
right, in blue, and synergies with Hangar Backwalker and stuff like that. That made it so that if you didn't have Insole Artifact, your deck was not total dog shit. So that was like the key point. Because otherwise, like, Insole has existed. Like, the combo Insole with other artifacts has existed, and it is actually really hard to stop. Like, it can race model red. That card, the 5/5, is just like, unless you have an Abzan charm or something, like, it's pretty crazy. But now to make the rest of their deck good is pretty awesome for that archetype.
Yeah. I mean, mono red has always had a tough time with, like, you know, the turn 2
5/5.
Yeah, the turn 2 5/5. And I mean, like, that's the same as Tazigar, right? Like, all that sort of stuff too. Like, early Tazigars can be obnoxious. You see it in modern, even. Fuck, like, Stonewall's a mono red deck, right? So
right,
yeah.
So I was surprised. I'm not sure if you guys talked about it already. I didn't know how to predict the finals because I felt like Joel Larson was going to be favored because of mono red, and John Stern felt the same. Except that there are games that, like, if you decide to tap out for Eidolon, and then they go Insole Artifact, they can easily outrace you with sandbagging, like, Shrapnel Blast to finish you off. So it was interesting, and Sigrist almost won the final, even mulling to 3 if he had an Insole Artifact off the top or something, like, instead of whatever he had, maybe he would have won, which is pretty crazy because the 5/5 is that good.
Yep.
And yeah, like, for me, I wish that I had time to tweak or test out all these other decks more. I mean, we basically tested all the stock lists. We played around with Pack. We did Jeskai tokens, Abzan, Green Rev Devotion, and other things like that. I messed around with Rally a bit, but with the whole team have, most of us having full-time jobs, it was really hard to really get together and set a week off to test together that other teams had. We basically flew in together on Thursday and like really sat down. Like me and Dan, I went to Ottawa to see him and we played games, but me and Lucas, we hadn't played since that Thursday. So we're talking about like very, very limited team testing between us. And I mean, well, I wish we could have done more, but you know, our schedules, we tried. We honestly did try to make our schedules work so we could get more testing in, and it just didn't work out. So we tried to do the best that we could. And I didn't hate the list that I brought. It wasn't an embarrassment by any means.
Well, so it's nice because I was able to see a lot of your commentary internally that you were really leveraging, you know, Slack as well. It was a really good tool for you for communication for the purposes of this. I mean, you're able to, you know, pull in information from a lot of different places and from a lot of different people. And, you know, it was nice to be able to use it in search and kind of like have that window in. And, you know, like I wish I could have been more help. But I mean, yeah, it was very evident that you were on the deck. You knew what you were doing and you knew what you were trying to accomplish with it. And then it was sweet. It was good to see.
Yeah. And my draft preparation was fine. What's interesting was to learn like how Flores ended up drafting. He was on Team Ultra Pro and he basically got handed a picture from Ben Stark or something. And it's basically a picture of the common and uncommon pick order. And he's like, I just memorized it and followed the guide. And every draft, my deck was sick. And I saw both of his draft decks and they were sick. He 2-1 and 3-0'd. He actually 3-0'd a sick pod.
Wow.
That included in day two, that included Fabiano, Rietzel, Brad Nelson, and some other guy that was also known. So it was a pretty sick pod that he was able to, bad player Flores was able to 3-0. And so the top.
KYT?
I think we just lost him. I think he just blew up.
He exploded. He's probably still talking.
It's because he gave away some Flores secrets. Flores had him whacked.
Yeah.
No one talks about me more than I do.
That's right.
Finish him.
But yeah, it was good. So Flores actually won enough over the weekend that he's now qualified for the next Pro Tour.
Did he get silver or did he get top 25?
Top 25.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at that. Great. I want another book.
I know, right? Yeah. How to Win by Team Ultra Pro.
Yeah.
Magic for the modern age.
Yes. You can pick up the OMG off of Star City Games.
You can, of course. So we did the math on the
hashtag did the math
rules. Hashtag did the math, and we have some results. We have in first place with 127 points.
Has to be you,
KYT.
KYT wow. Crushed it.
But you picked the guy that went to the final.
Yep, yeah. Which got me 42 points.
Yeah, so the highest single per and if he had won it, he would have actually stolen.
It would have spiked.
Yeah,
he had just not. If he had mulliganed to five instead of three, I might have won that game. Anyway,
yeah, where was I? What the fuck happened? I disconnected.
Yeah, you disconnected. We've switched the topic into our fantasy draft.
Okay,
so you won it.
Congratulations, you won at 127 points.
What?
Yeah, your team was insane.
I thought you would win it for sure, Scott.
So I did have the highest individual point for a player. But anyway, so second place with 27 points, 24 points, 30 points, and 31 points is Jay at 112.
Ah, suck it.
Yeah.
Losers.
I did come in third. I had 30, 24, 9, and 42. So Yuya Watanabe shit the bed for 9 points this Pro Tour and undoubtedly cost him a pick. In any universe that he scores 20 more points, I'm still
yeah
behind.
Really
yeah.
And then Jer, of course, with 24, 30, 30, and 9. His 9 points, of course, were scored by
Mr. Namsumwork.
spirit animal my ass.
He has forsaken you.
No, no, he's just gathering his strength for the next one.
Oh, yeah.
So, so anyway, Jer did not win. KYT did win.
Yeah.
And so the three of us are going to have to send KYT.
Boy, I fucking stole it with that last pick, man. Wait, I can't believe. Yeah.
It's not the three of us send him one. It's Jeremy sends each of us one.
Oh, right. So
oh, is that how it works?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck me. Because
nobody needs fucking four copies of KYT's regular.
No. Well, I just bought a foil one on Face to Face Games for $2.
Yeah, me.
Yeah. So yeah, KYT actually with your Flores pick, it with his 33 points, it got you there.
Oh yeah, what a sicko!
Yeah,
KYT, cool. I'm gonna give them to you. You know, kind of doing like a little bit of transition at a super sick GP in Toronto. It sounds like there's gonna be.
Yes. Yes.
So, okay, so we're gonna so we can talk about that sort of stuff. So that's a good transition. Pro Tour was great. I was busting my nut watching the top eight because Sigurs is an animal, and I unfortunately fell short. So that was that. But Hélène Bergeau had some amazing announcements.
Yep.
Not the least of which was a series of Grand Prix dates and locations.
Yeah, so we got the new schedule for the year, which is
new schedule for the year. I've already planned out my GPs for this year with the wife, covered it off.
Wow.
So I will be in Detroit in March for a modern GP, March 5th weekend. I will be in Toronto for my birthday weekend. So it's April 30th and 1st. Something special about that one, KYT? Who's running that event?
For the first time ever, I'm proud to say, and as a recent employee of Face to Face Games, Face to Face Games is running and hosting this GP. It is huge news. This is insane news for us. We're just very happy. Like, it allows us to push the brand further and show the rest of the world how Face to Face Games runs tournaments. And so far, like, the community is very excited because we are known for hosting excellent tournaments, and we will continue that trend in Toronto.
So
the fact that it's in Toronto
is
really exciting because that means that functionally the TO is Kelly.
Yeah, and like this is the part that like everybody who doesn't know needs to know. Kelly is actually the secret weapon. This is the guy who is like competing not with other PTQs. He was competing with Moto PTQs when he was running the old style PTQs. Like his PTQs were insane attendance, and they all went swimmingly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a guy who's got like as close as you could probably get to GP experience without actually running GPs.
Well, he also helped run all of the WMCQs last year.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting as well. So he definitely has the pedigree behind him to make sure this is going to be insane. You combine that with the fact that KYT now has all the time in the world to help promote and generate ideas and things for this event, which I think is amazing. We will have, of course, an amazing venue that'll be picked out because it is going to be local and all the people that are there are downtown. So they know what to pick and what's going to be good and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
I volunteered my services to put together the Mana Deprived party / my birthday.
So that there's enough to buy a plane ticket, folks. you could do terrible at the tournament, but you will remember the party. I remember.
When is this?
April 30th, May 1st. That's
oh man, that's like more than enough time for me to plan.
Yes,
yeah. No, I think that all four of us have to be at this one. I know we talk about doing it at all the other ones.
KYT always fucking bails.
Yeah, this one here is the one that it actually comes through. This one has to come through.
Showed up to your wedding.
Yeah, okay. All right.
That's how you get KYT to go anywhere. It has to be a wedding. Fuck a GP. But if it's a wedding, he'll be there.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of time for you to
you
plan
can't back out of this one, KYT. You can't.
I can't. I mean, I can't imagine not.
No,
being
I will call Sal.
It's not Sal you gotta call.
I mean, I can't imagine that I won't be there unless some crazy shit happens. But there's a lot of planning that still that will rather need to be done by us. And as exciting as it is, it's going to be a ton of work to make sure that this is the best fucking first GP that that we'll ever do. So
I certainly hope you've already got lots of planning already done and you're just not telling us any of the deets. Because, like, the clock is ticking already.
When did you guys know you were getting a GP?
That detail, that I don't know that.
Okay.
That would be...
And are you going to even be able to hang out with us? You're going to have to work now that you're an employee.
Oh, I'm an employee, but I don't have to do the buying and sorting and stuff like that.
He's going to play in the event, but on Friday, we're going to have a broadcaster table.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. I think GP Toronto live show is just like an actual thing that should happen.
Unbeatable super bomb.
Yeah, there's got to be a corner in the hall that can fit.
Oh, God. Can you imagine a live A-team episode? That'd be sick. And you know what? We could organize having different pros in and out, too, if we wanted to just, like, shoot the shit with.
Oh, yeah.
And this could be insane.
Come on, Shaheen. You got to come.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's standard. He'll be there. Plus, it's going to be, like, after Zendikar.
Yeah. So they'll be Hane, like, can slap me in person.
There you go.
The other news that got me really excited, but it's not really... It was probably not geared towards us, but probably
wait.
Oh, one more thing.
Yeah. So we're also going to the limited GP in Montreal on June 30th, July 1st weekend, right? Or some shit.
Oh, yeah.
And then the last one that I will be attending is going to be GP New York City, August 23rd weekend. I got my fucking Christmas present. All I wanted was a New York City, not a fucking Jersey, not an Albany, New York, fucking New York City, bitch. GP. I am so excited. Alana's coming too. We're going to make a big thing of it. It's going to be wild. I'm very excited. Very excited.
Well, I'm going to look at my list and see if I can make it mirror your list a bit.
Nice.
I'm thinking that number 2 and number 4 might be doable.
Yes, sir. I think New York City is going to be the next, like, big one, because how do you not just converge on the Big Apple and take a
bite? Yeah. You know? They best get MSG.
Yeah.
They won't, but that'd be sweet. There's no way.
Yeah, it's a 0%er, I know.
Yeah.
They'll just have to do it at, like, Carnegie Hall or something.
So it's pretty exciting. I can't wait. We'll get to do all of the cool New York stuff. We know enough cool people in New York City that we can do some pretty amazing things. So,
is there anything to do in New York City?
No, nothing. It's
probably not a
shithole. Just kidding. But yeah. So KYT, were you going to talk about the changes that they made to the
things
to the records?
No. For me, potentially really exciting for us at face-to-face games and Mana Deprived moving forward, but it's probably a nod to the SCG Open Series.
Yes.
It's basically the fact that they might consider giving series that have 20 qualifying events the winner of such, you know, invitational PT slot.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And that's just
really cool.
Sweet. I mean, if they extended beyond the SCG Open Series to events, I don't know if they're going to have what type of minimum requirements that they have, but
the TCG Max Point Series fits the bill.
Yeah,
that's my understanding. Right. Those are sort of the rumblings about the two event chains currently.
What about like the Sunday Super Series?
Oh,
the Sunday Super Series would definitely have it.
The one that they do like for that tournament of Wizards on Sundays.
Yeah, like on the Sundays of GPs and stuff like that, where at the end you end up at Wizards. That has more than 20 events. That's the thing. Whoever wins the Sunday Super Series probably deserves a Pro Tour invite.
That sound like the one, like the one at Wizards when you win the.
Yeah, the one at Wizards. Yeah, the invitational aspect.
That sounds logic.
So you know, if we were kind of like going like, okay, so in order for this to be really good for the Mana Deprived Super Series, then that means that they need to have an actual invitational at the end.
So I'm going to read into that, that we're going to start to see maybe the winner of each of the regional tournaments getting a trip out to Montreal or Toronto for a big tournament.
Right, or a small tournament. So it's like far down the line, but it opens like it's again, it's in the writing. It said that it's to Wizards consideration. So obviously we're small fry compared to these other big tournaments, but it just opens.
You're
maybe
the biggest one in Canada.
Yeah it opens some potential. And if it works out, this is huge. It would bring a lot more people in. And for us to give away a PT slot would be really exciting for us as well. So it's win-win if it happens, and just excited about that. And but I do
just
wonder how.
It, like, yeah, if there was a pro tour invite at the end, like that would be the difference between me not going to Saskatoon and me going to Saskatoon.
Right. So it's huge. Like, it's huge.
Yeah, that is a big enough carrot that I would make that trap.
Nice. Evan tweeted something about it regarding SCG, and they are going to 100% be offering the slot to the Players Championship. But it also sounds like they're also going to offer a pro tour invite at each invitational for the winner as well. So that's pretty neat there.
Yeah, that's sick. Yeah. That makes those tournaments wow. Like
I Ali Antrazi is kind of like, ship it, boys. Ship it.
Yeah.
Ship it.
Yeah. But the other one that was really neat too is in addition to that, they said that now to make day two of a GP, you only need everybody with 18 match points or more. So that means 6 wins instead of 7.
That is like the worst thing ever.
You think so?
Wow. Snap, worst thing ever.
Okay, why it's the worst thing ever is that because at 6-3, you are not going to make the top 8. And you're in like that position where it's like, when you're 7-2, it was already like pulling nails. But now it's at 6-3. It's like, do I really want to come back and do this tomorrow? Do I really want to grind up? Like, you can cash. You can definitely cash and get some pro points.
Is they've added more to the wallet, too.
Yeah, so it's just like, it would be so demoralizing. Like, okay, I'm going to come back into a tournament where I don't have the outside shot. I can make some prizing. But, like, I even at, like, Friday Night Magic, like, if I can't, like, get, like, the foil or whatever like that, or if it's, like, a GPT that I'm not going to make the top 8, I have a real tough time being motivated to stay for pack prizes.
Yeah.
Now, cash prizes is a different thing.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty sweet. I think there's a lot of people that I think that also has to do with the fact that they've reduced the buys too, right?
Yeah. Now that might hurt like something like the Sunday Super Series.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, Jer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you think of like even on Sundays are usually like the day that they'll do like a fundraising type tournaments and stuff like that, like charity tournaments. They usually save that stuff for the Sunday, and that's going to get just chewed up by this because you're going to have more people who are going to stay. You know, like, I know that that's odd for me, but you'll always find it at a Grand Prix that you'll see some people in the X5 bracket playing. Like, they exist. And when you're judging, it's always the worst because it's like, those are the people who are going to time.
Every single match.
Yeah, it's just like, can't we just, like, start without them? Like, we'll just put whatever you want in the system. We'll let them go. We'll just get the next round going.
Yeah, really.
Jeremy, from their perspective, why do you think they did this? Because, obviously, by cutting the field when you're just to X2s, it makes the tournament, the GP, easier to run, right? Or
it does. It makes it smaller, which is important. But I don't know what kind of like their motivation is for this. Like, it's very interesting. It's going to be to see what happens with the Sunday Super Series if there's something that's not going with it. Like, I don't know who actually organized that. Like, whose event was it? Because I don't think that was Wizards of the Coast event. I think that was like an independent thing. Like, could that have been a Legion project? Was that Legion's? Because with kind of the changes that Legion's is out, like, maybe they kind of took their cake with it in a sense.
That's interesting. Yeah, I have no idea about that.
But it's like, the question is like, why do we want to motivate more people to play in day two?
Well, yeah, that's what
obviously
I want to know.
The judging is fine.
So there's two things, right?
Yeah.
So they want more people to go, right? So there's two things that have changed, I think. Well, three things I think that have changed that are going to incent more people to play in day
two. Okay, yeah, that's okay? True.
Yeah.
So number one is they've increased the pot. Right. So now it's like 50K.
No. And if it's over so many people, it goes up.
If it's over 3,000, it goes to $75,000. So that's good. And it's going to be more top heavy. So there's more at stake. Right. And that's, of course, I'm sure in no small part due to the Tarmogoyf incident. Tarmogate. But Goyf Gate, rather. But so that's going to be. But then you take a look at it and you go, all right. So 6-3 makes day two. What am I playing? Well, now at the larger events, everybody who gets X whatever is going to make the tour, right? What do they say? What do they say it is? Like
it's X2.
It's X2. Okay.
Yeah, X2. It used to be that X2, everyone who was X2 got an invite, but only the top eight got paid tickets.
So now everybody if you're X2, an invite, you get... also gets the travel, which I think is really important. So if you're gonna see larger numbers of people going to these tournaments, there's a good chance that I guess it's the smaller the tournament, the better chance an X3 gets in, but I mean a better chance that you're cashing. So and more people playing late to try to score that stuff. So I think all together it's going to be great. I think it provides less feel bad scenarios for people, and it's going to lower the bar a little bit for people that want to come in and play in their first GP or start traveling for them. So
I think it's really good that they went and solidified weekends for GPs. So if you have like two GPs happening on the same weekend, they're going to try and be the same format.
Yeah.
That was really tough on the TOs. I remember talking with Ness back in the day about GP Quebec City that was against Charlotte. And they gave Charlotte the limited and they had the standard and they really wanted the limited. But they ended up getting told it couldn't happen. And then the limited went down there and they got completely butchered.
Yeah. So. So yeah, if there's a GP on each week on a weekend, every GP is the same format.
My question is, Scott, you said it's top heavy. I haven't actually looked at the structure. Does this new thing favored elite players? Does it like
The quote is the breakdown of the prize payout will also be revisited, becoming more top heavy in order to recognize the impressive performance of top finishers. The detailed breakdown will be announced later this year.
Ah, okay.
Interesting. What else came out of that? We're seeing less GPs.
A little bit less, yeah.
Yeah.
They're dropping the number. Oh, one of their big TOs isn't a TO anymore.
Yeah, that's Legion.
That's a big one.
Apparently that wasn't voluntary.
No.
No. It looks like CFB is picking up more events.
I like that they're giving the ones overseas to CFB and SCG.
Yeah.
Because I think that...
The ones overseas were having a lot of problems.
Well, and I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that, like, standard TOs aren't going to pick up the bill to run that shit.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas these large organizations do a very good job time and time again of demonstrating that they put on a really good big ticket show. And, they're happy to spend the dollars to make it a great event. And I'm very pleased to see that trend is continuing. So, for Pro Tours, the locations are Atlanta, Georgia, Madrid, Spain, Sydney, Australia, and Honolulu, Hawaii. So that's interesting. And yeah, it's sweet. The event schedule looks pretty good.
Yeah, PPTQs are now like going to be, there's no lulls in between them. Like pretty much the seasons go straight through.
Except that there is a break coming.
Yes, but that's, I think, the break that we had built into the old system. With the new system, I think the breaks are kind of
gone. That's correct.
Couple new things out of that that's really neat, like especially for me out here and Jay to a lesser extent, is how they're changing up a little bit of the RPTQ thing. So now with the RPTQs, they don't have to happen on one specific weekend. It's now two different weekends that they can have.
Oh, sweet.
So it kind of gives you a chance to get freed up if you're busy that particular weekend. Also really helpful if there was a GP in the area. So like it's like, oh, do I choose to go to a GP in my area or do I go to the RPTQ? And then the really cool thing for like remote people, if you can get PPTQs like in Fort McMurray or PPTQ up, like even up in something like Yellowknife. Now they can go and play an RPTQ on Magic Online.
Oh, wow.
That's really awesome.
So they're going to
Yeah, so they're going to put an RPTQ on Magic Online that you'll be able to play in.
And, like, you qualify from real-life PPTQs?
Yep. That's the way that they kind of had it out. So they haven't really put out a ton of detail, but it's a really neat idea to kind of help these regional, like, areas that are really far apart. Like, me going to Vancouver just might not be reasonable.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can play my one event online, that's a lot more accommodating.
Well, I have some exciting news. I will be streaming this Thursday on another streamer event. Magic Origins this time. So I don't know who my opponents are yet, but I'm pretty excited. Sounds like I will have a sweet co-pilot again. Pro Tour finalist Mike Sigrist may very well join me again on the stream, and this time to battle some Limited. What? I mean, like, if he can't make it, he's going to at least, you know, send me along some pick order information, and we'll go from there. So, but no, it's going to be neat. I'm very excited to participate again, as always, and I can't wait. Cannot wait. But yeah, so it's going to be we've got a lot on tap. It's going to be exciting. That GP Toronto, put it on your calendars now. You all need to be there.
Yeah, what are the dates again?
It is going to be April 30th and March and May 1st. That's the weekend in 2016.
Is that like May long weekend?
No.
Ugh. Why is it never on long weekend? Fuck.
Because it isn't. But yeah, so it's unfortunately, Jay, it is definitely not the long weekend. Is it Easter?
Bullshit.
Is it Easter?
Oh, probably not, right?
Not. No, it's March.
Yeah.
You know, Jay, if you were Jewish, Saturday, April 30th is the last day of Passover. If you were Orthodox, it's Orthodox Easter. Hmm. So you tell your employer that you're observing the Orthodox holiday and you won't be at work.
Nice.
Tell them that you identify as Orthodox.
I would just say I'm observing it.
Please don't fire me.
Please don't.
Oh. You'd better not fire me.
Yeah, bitch.
Bitch. Throw in bitch for good measure. Well, I guess that just about wraps up our show this evening. Unless there's anything else you guys want to add.
Fuck.
Fuck what?
I'm trying to download Hearthstone for my PC because I got it on my tablet.
Oh, okay.
But I can't remember my password for my stupid Battle.net account.
That's terrible.
And they make you send in a picture of your fucking photo ID to get it back. What a bunch of fucking bullshit. That's like the only company on the planet that I've ever heard of doing that.
Well, all right. I'm going to go. I'm going to record another podcast with the Masters of Modern.
Cool.
So look for that. I'm sure we will be talking a bunch of things all Geist. So that's super exciting. That's where I'm going right now. Just got to make sure I change the domer first. You know what? It's nice because we got to talk all about Standard tonight. And then I don't have to talk about Standard. Pretty exciting stuff. Hopefully, crush fingers. Like, pardon me, I have.
Oh man, I figured out my password. Hack the planet.
Hack the planet.
The planet. It was like in the fucking movies, you know, when like people hack, they just like type
zero cool
like usernames like 100 times, and then it just like lets them in.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened. I just tried like 58 different emails.
Nice. Nice. All right. Well, I guess with that we'll wrap it up. KYT, say goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye, everyone. I can't wait to get back into the thick of things because I've been busy with traveling. But next week can't wait. But I'm gonna start grinding like the Moto PTQs and RPTQs. Well, not RPTQs, but the Moto PTQs and the PTQ finals a lot more than before. the flame was very much burning when I was eliminated this past weekend. In fact, I was searching up if it was feasible for me to make Grand Prix San Diego next weekend. But I don't think it would be very smart financially for me to make it. I looked it up. It's a $500 flight, which is pretty low from Montreal to like all the way to the West Coast.
But
I'm just going to try to do it the Kenji Igashira way. I mean, it's a lot more financially feasible. And with so many of the better players like bitching about Moto and quitting, I mean, maybe it's softer than it ever was before. So I don't know. I'm going to try this week. Yeah, Scott and I have never stopped. Well, and Jeremy have never stopped playing Moto, so nope. It's unlikely to start. But thanks for all the support, guys. Because every time, even at the Pro Tour, there was at least a few people to approach me that said they loved the show. So I want to point that out. So shout outs to Troy and some of the other ones that I don't remember. Troy was the last guy.
Wow.
Yeah, you were definitely the standout. Yeah, these guys I'm just sitting there. I'm just sitting there, and they see me just sitting around watching the top eight, and they came to say hi, and it's really cool that they not only say hi, but they have a conversation with me. And so it's really cool to be able to interact with some of our fans, and just goes to show that we have fans everywhere, because every Grand Prix I've traveled, there's always someone that mentions that they appreciate our show. So thanks a lot to you guys.
Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, we will see you all next week. Take it easy. Have yourselves a great one and play lots of Magic. We'll see you all soon. Peace.
Bye.